Parkcast, the UK's original theme park podcast.
Welcome back to Parkcast, park fans. We're a podcast for theme park fans, and we love chatting about all things going on in the theme park world. I'm Bex. Kev isn't here this week, but I have got a special guest, very apt for this time of year, especially where we are right now. We are going into massive half-term Scarefest peak season. So I'm really happy that I've managed to get this guy on. I did say a couple of weeks ago on the podcast, I wanted to get someone on who'd worked behind the scenes with helping to bring Scarefest, Scare Mazes to life. And I have got the absolute best person I possibly could for that. Delighted to welcome to Parkcast, Kieran Kimberley, who was the creative manager for Scarefest for many, many years. Welcome to the Parkcast.
Hello, thank you for having me on. And what a nice introduction as well. That was lovely.
Oh, you are. Do you want me to just like randomly walk with you down the streets, just introducing you to people like that?
That would be fabulous, yeah.
I can do that. If you go to Morrison's, I'll just say, do you know who this is? I'm so pleased that you've agreed to come on and share some secrets, and you will share a few secrets about Scarefest, but mainly about how these things get put together and how we get to the final stage of us as guests going to enjoy them. As I have said on the podcast many times before, I don't do scare mazes because I'm a massive, massive wuss and I cannot handle jump scares. But I know that so many of you who listen absolutely love these attractions. And I think this is going to be really interesting to chat about. So let's take it back. You were creative manager of Scarefest from 2016. But before that, you've been at Alton Towers for longer than that.
Yes. Yeah, so I started Alton Towers in about 2011. My first job at Alton Towers was as a scare actor as well.
So nice.
It kind of became full circle, you know, that I got to look after Scarefest for so many years afterwards.
Did you always sort of have a passion for acting, or was it just one of these jobs that you saw come up and you thought, oh, actually, that sounds pretty cool?
So I've trained as a performer, grew up in theatre, so kind of been around all kinds of performing arts, dance, drama, all of that kind of thing. And then it was after I finished performing arts college, I saw an advert for Alton Towers Scarefest, and it was kind of the first audition I did after graduating. I live in Stoke, so it's not too far away from home, so it made sense to kind of go to the audition. And as I said over many years, I came on a 2-week contract to Alton Towers and didn't leave for 15 years, so you know. But prior to that, I'd never had any interest in scare attractions or in working in them or going to them. I've always loved horror, but never a scare attraction. It really opened my eyes that first year, yeah.
It's amazing how many people I've spoken to on this podcast who work in the industry say a similar thing, that they went somewhere for a temporary job or part-time job. Neil Dwyer, for example, who's running Six Flags Cadia, he went to Camelot for a summer job. And now he's ended up, you know, running this huge amusement park that's going to open. It does seem like a really good way in if you want to get into the industry, to take one of these roles that may seem temporary, but actually lead on to something that lasts a lot longer.
And you learn a lot from working on, you know, whatever you want to call it, an entry-level job, frontline job, whatever it isn't. You learn a lot from doing it. So I don't think I could have developed scare attractions the way I did for many years without having to work in them prior. So, yeah, it's really useful.
And I guess working at the most basic level in them, as being a scare actor, you learn what you don't want to be like in the future, maybe, or you learn from people who are great managers. You see the whole thing. You see the response that guests get to you, and you learn from that and you go, okay, well, that really works or that doesn't.
And also because I did it for 5 years, you learn how industry is changing. So working in a scare maze 5 years in a row, you see the differences year on year. So when I became a creative, it kind of made sense to kind of continue that development as well. So as well as taking into account, you know, all the scares that I know I did and worked when I did them, you kind of see how things are developing and how you can change them.
What was the first maze that you worked in as a scare actor?
It was Carnival of Screams.
A classic.
Yeah, I worked in Carnival for three Scarefests. So the first year was when it was in the old Black Hole tent.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So, wow, that's going back, isn't it?
Yeah. But that was eye-opening as well, to get to be essentially inside what would have been quite dark the rest of the time.
And did you sort of just have one role in it? How does it work? Or do you move around and you play different parts?
Many scare mazes work differently. That year in particular, first year, I was assigned one role to start off with, and then very quickly I was switched to another. So the performer who was playing the living dummy, which was the kind of the new character for that year, he left on like the first day. Scare
Not
acting's not for
ideal.
everyone. And because I was a similar body type, that they recast me into the role as the living dummy, and I had a lot of fun playing that for the rest of that Scarefest.
Amazing, yeah. Hasn't that been brought back this year as well?
I think I've seen some of the costume be reutilized as a different character in one of the new
Yeah,
skeletons.
I think so. Like I said, I haven't seen any of it with my own eyes because I can't do that. Okay, so you are living your life quite merrily as a scare actor year on year. What did you do in between? That always interests me. So, because Scarefest only lasts for like a couple of weeks.
So I was a performer and actor, so I performed at Alton Towers in their main season as well. Which again was another kind of step up when it came to applying for the creative role, because I had done every aspect of entertainment at Alton Towers. So I was part of the performance team that opened CBeebies Land, for example. I'd been on the street theatre, I'd worked in Splash Landing's hotel as an entertainer there. I'd been in the first panto that they did in 2015. So not just at Halloween, I worked there throughout as well. And also, I don't know if you remember the Sanctuary when it opened in 2013 at the start of the season. I was part of that cast as well. So that was unique, getting to scare in March.
Yes, because that was all part of the initial sort of storyline for Smiler and stuff, wasn't it? It was all linked in with that.
Yeah, so we were in the Sanctuary from the start of that season all the way to when the Smiler opened. So yeah, that was a lot of fun.
How do you go then from being just a scare actor into this creative manager role? Because that must be a bit of a step up for you.
Opportunity. That's the simplest answer, because as I said, I worked at Alton Towers doing lots of different performance roles, but I also performed outside of Alton Towers. I wrote shows for outside of Alton Towers in that time. I was also a team leader for a while, so it was called a show captain then. At the park, I worked with lots of different people. So I worked with the Drifters, the band the Drifters, on a couple of their
Oh,
tours.
yeah.
So I'd done lots of creative work outside of Alton Towers. So when it came to the job becoming open, it seemed like a natural fit for me to apply. And as I mentioned at the top, like, I've always enjoyed horror, so it seemed to be a fun thing to do, to kind of create that horror. So yeah, that it was just opportunity, right place, right time.
And the talent to go with it as well. Let's not forget that. So this was 2016. So you were given the job, and you're like, "Yep, okay, you're the creative manager now." How big is that scope as creative manager? Where does your job role sort of start and end?
In 2016, it was a very different world to how it became post-pandemic, shall we say. So when I started, there was three of us hired at the same time, and we kind of worked quite nicely as like a little kind of theatre creative team. There's a musical director, a choreographer, and a director, scriptwriter. At the time, there was a very small kind of core entertainment offering at Alton Towers, and Scarefest was quite small. So there was only like three scare mazes and a scare zone, and the Alton Ancestors and Freaky Friends, for example. And Christmas was quite small as well. But then over the years, we grew those events. So as a team, we introduced family attractions. We added extra scare zones. We made Christmas bigger. We made the theme park entertainment for the rest of the season bigger over those years as well. And also, we were part of the team's instrumental in delivering all of the new events that came along. So the Feb Half Term event we just spoke about. But also, obviously, there was Mardi Gras, there was Oktoberfest, Festival of Thrills, there was Summer of Fun. So our job became, a job scope became bigger and bigger over the years, to the point where it was non-stop.
Yeah, I mean, we weren't complaining about that as theme park fans. We absolutely loved all those extra events that Alton Towers put on, and sadly missed now, which I know we'll probably come on to. So in 2016 then, were you sort of charged with opening a new maze, coming up with a new idea, new concept?
So we took our job role in the July, so that's quite far into the development of Scarefest already. Mm. So there was a couple of inherited concepts that we took on from the previous creative. So it was unnamed at the time, but what became Alterville Mind Tours, that was the first year of that. So that had already started to develop. Isn't as much as there was a concept, there was some designs that the construction team had already started to build, but it was kind of missing the kind of the story arc and the characters and kind of what tied it all together. So that's kind of where we came in. That was also the first year of House of Monsters. So again, there was a concept there. There was some characters there, but there was no script. There was no what the actual show was. So we had to develop all of that. And it was also the first year of the Freak Show Scare Zone, which, again, there was a name. There was a design for the entrance sign, but everything else was kind of up to us to kind of create. And out of the team, I was the one with the scare experience. So I was the one that kind of took the charge on all of those things and kind of made them into what they became.
Okay, let's talk about Altonville Mind Tours then, because I'm actually amazed when you've just said it. So it's 2016 that we first saw that. We're now in 2025. It's still going. You had to come up with a storyline, and like you said, it's July and there's not a lot of time to October. So how long did it take for you to really develop that and get to where you wanted it to be for opening?
So the concept initially was about this family that had some kind of hideous faces that lived in a mine and took people's skin. So kind of what I did was I looked to the tropes that are out there. I think it's very important with horror to kind of look at the tropes. And I think Altonville wears its tropes on its sleeve. And there's a lot of horror films, a lot of media out there that kind of fall into that category of people wearing people's skin. I mean, Ed Gein's story's just come out on Netflix, yeah, which is the origin of most of these stories.
Yeah.
So, you know, that if you go back to 2016, 2017, and you go through Altonville Mind Tours, you could see those tropes smack you in the face, really. So you could see Texas Chainsaw Massacre, you could see House of a Thousand Corpses, you can see Silence of the Lambs, anything that you can think of where some hideous person kills people for their skin.
Mm-hmm.
It's got its flavor. So in that respect, it was kind of easy to develop, and you kind of look to the tropes and pull out those characters from those tropes. So again, House of a Thousand Corpses was a perfect example, because that itself is almost pastiche of a kind of a late 1970s horror film. So pulling out those characters, you really rooting it in that world of the Deep South with the accents. It was,
yeah.
So that was kind of easy. And then I wrote the script for the opening show, which was a lot of fun. So it was the Welcome to the Altonville Mind Tours. My family have been mining down here for generations and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, a lot of fun to write that one.
Do you actually create like the maze element of it at that same point as well? So you're literally working out, right, someone's going to turn left here, then we want to take a right, and then we put in the scares here, here and here?
Not so much with Altonville, because it, as I say, it was kind of already in the process of being built. So I think the team were about halfway through essentially laying out that route and into the attraction when we came in. So I think I made a couple of changes to what was then the finale. But that changed the year afterwards. So we changed the whole finale for 2017 anyway. We added in quite a famous scene, which was that gift shop scene at the end. But in regards to where the actors scare from, I kind of just had to use what was there for that one. That's not to say I didn't for the future. So for scare mazes that came afterwards, very, very instrumental in going, right, we need actor accesses here, here, and here. This route is too simple. Can we do a little switchback on it? Can we make this more of a S shape and kind of those kind of things as well?
So how do you start even beginning to work that out? Is it just from experience of going through the mazes and working in them? How do you kind of know this is going to be scarier than that?
A lot of where to scare from is instinct. If you've ever played a prank on someone, if you've ever hidden behind a door and jumped out at somebody and gone boo, you knew that the best place was to hide behind that door in that room. So if you've got a space, a defined space, you can kind of work out where the best points would be to scare from. And if you've got the ability to cut holes in walls and things like that to put in those scare points, then you can. But a lot of it is space determined. So for example, when we worked on the attic, that space was already there, but we had to build a world within it so we could literally walk a route and go, right, best use of this big long open room now is to go down here, turn left, back on yourself, and things like that. So I took the technical designer, the guy who draws out all the routes and things like that, I took him with me to kind of go, right, this is what I think the best use of this space would be. And it creates this kind of, we call them rat runs. So these are like the little back of house areas that the performers can hide in, jump out from and run ahead of you, like a little rat, essentially. That's where the name comes from. You know, we can create this space, and that would put this rat run down the middle. So that means that they can have 3, 4, 5, 6 scare points to kind of scare from. Best rat run I've ever seen ever is in Altonville Mantors. And it's still there now. In the central rooms of Altonville, there's one rat run where I think there's like 15 scare points in it.
Wow.
So like one or two performers can have a party in that rat run.
How do you keep track then as a performer of where you're supposed to be at what time, which hole you're popping out of at each time? Or is it like almost choreographed like a dance routine?
Yes, I have been known to choreograph some scares with teams in certain areas and go, right, okay, if there's two of you working together, you need to pop out of this curtain, then you out of this curtain, then you out of this curtain and stuff, and you know, and things like that. But that's why we do rehearsal. It becomes muscle memory. And as I say, it becomes instinct. After you've done it a day, you kind of know where people are going to be at any given time without actually seeing them. So you get used to it and you can have a lot of fun with it because it just feels natural then.
Yeah, because I guess you must know when a group is being batched through and then you sort of come to life once they get to your little bit.
Yes, that's true probably for the first group of the day, but at Alton Towers and probably somewhere like Thorpe Park, because there's such high throughputs, there's a group all the time. You know, secret, they batch around 90 seconds at Alton Towers. Sometimes it's a bit longer, sometimes it's a bit shorter, depending on the attraction. But it's pretty constant. So you probably have enough time to scare your group 3 or 4 times. Quick drink of water, reset, do it all again, and the next group's there.
Wow.
Especially on busier days. Other attractions, so, you know, if we're talking about things like burial grounds, for example, it's pretty constant. You won't have time to do that reset in the same way because there are guests coming all the time.
Yeah. It must be really quite intense then for the actors.
It can be, but it is a lot of fun. I think sometimes the reward is greater than the effort. What's quite unique about scare acting compared to other performance art is you get your instant reaction. You go see a musical, you might clap at the end of every song, but essentially the performers don't really get your appreciation until the end when you all stand on your feet. But with scare acting, you get that instant reaction, whatever it is, whether it's a scream, a giggle, or you know, somebody goes into fight or flight mode, somebody falls to the floor, whatever that reaction is, you get your dopamine rush straight away.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I've heard a lot of people say they keep coming back to scare acting after they've done other things just because there's nothing like it. You don't get that buzz, that adrenaline buzz from anything else for that reason.
Yeah, it does sound like a lot of fun. Have you ever had a reaction, like a negative reaction from someone? Obviously, all the time you get told, like, don't touch the scare actors. It must happen.
It does. But it's definitely the exception and not the norm. A lot of new time scare actors, when they go into rehearsals, or a lot of the veterans will, they'll spread their war stories of all these horrible things that have happened to them. And sometimes that's quite frustrating as it's fun, but it's frustrating as a director because you have to go, right, okay, chill. It doesn't happen all the time. But it does happen. And so I know Alton Towers are very kind of aware of that it can happen. So they make an effort to deliver conflict management training to all their performers as well, so that they know how to deal with these situations. For me personally, the best scare I've ever done is after somebody is hit me. It was in Subspecies. Subspecies of the Endgames in 2015, the first year of that. That was quite new. It was a hands-on attraction at Alton Towers, which we hadn't really done before. There was this one couple that the girl was, she'd slapped about three or four of the performers. So I was the show captain, so I kind of came in as kind of an authoritative figure to be like, calm down. So she slapped three or four of these performers. She got to me. I'm not in character. I'm saying, you need to calm down. So she slaps me and I'm like, ow. No, this isn't on. This is your final warning. And as I said the words final warning, I got a punch to the throat. So I was like,
No.
oh. But her and her boyfriend at the time, they found it the funniest thing ever. They were giggling away at punching the actors. So then I had a radio being the show captain. So I radioed for the attraction supervisor, but also for security. And she heard me do it. And on that radio, she then collapsed to the floor and started apologizing. That was the best scare she'd had all day, was from me threatening to get security.
Oh wow. And in a case like that, does she actually get taken off the park? I guess she can't. You can't go around punching people in the throat and get away with
No, she. I think she definitely got removed from the resort. I didn't
it.
really pay attention to her after attraction supervisor arrived. But yeah, sometimes it's instinctive. So sometimes people don't mean to do it, and you know they flail their arms when you scare them, which is a natural reaction. But you get used to knowing that that is a natural reaction, and quite often they don't hurt. It's when people do it on purpose that it hurts. But the thing is, you can get most of the time you can kind of spot the people that are going to give you those reactions prior to doing it. So that becomes performer discretion then. You make a choice. You either go, oh, that person looks like they might lash out at me. Some performers they like getting a response, so they'll still go after that scare.
Try and really scare them. What about the other side of it? Have you ever had anyone, this would be me, so scared that they literally just collapse or faint or curl up in a ball or anything like that?
Yes. Fear is a strange thing. It can make people do strange things. And sometimes people don't know what their reaction is until they get scared. So, yes, we have had people drop to the floor, fetal position, curl up in a corner, and almost impossible to kind of move on. And it doesn't matter, you know, it doesn't matter how many times you say to them, look, we are just actors. Because they don't trust you because you have scary face paint on, so they'll still stay there. But it has happened.
And what do you do in that situation? Do you move them into one of these rat runs, or how do you get them out without disturbing it, I suppose, for everyone else who's still coming through as a normal guest?
There's lots of different ways to deal with it. Again, this is all part of the actor training that we do, and the performers kind of have to use their best judgment. So if it's we just need to calm someone down, then we make those best efforts to do that, and then they might carry on or they might leave the attraction. We could always call one of our front of house team. All of the attractions at Alton Towers have they call them attraction supervisors, so they're kind of like the manager of the attraction, who can always come in and help if it's really if it's if this person just isn't moving on. They also all have emergency stops as well, so the performer could always press an emergency stop. Lights come on, evacuation happens, and then we can get that person the help that they require. But Yeah, it's not a common thing, but it does happen.
It's not a common thing because I don't go in them in the first place. But I remember I went, actually, I have been in a couple of the mazes. I went to a press launch for Project 42. And I went for a run through of that with, believe it or not, Melinda Messenger was in my group, and she was, I'm scared, she was petrified. Like, she was absolutely losing it. And I do remember someone just kind of grabbing her and putting her out an emergency exit to one side because she was just not coping with it at all.
Yeah, the whenever we've done press events, I always like the press events because the reactions from your celebrity clientele tend to be a little bit bigger, because they're not faced with these situations very often.
Yeah, was Project 42 something you worked on?
Yes, so Project 42 is an interesting one, how it came about. My manager at the time, who was the director of entertainment, took a few of us up to Nemesis of Terror, just to kind of have an exploratory look. And we were asking, is this for a scare attraction for this year? And his response was, no, it's all hypothetical. This is just if somebody says, oh, is there something we could do? What can we do? So we're just there having a look. 2 rooms in, a production manager turns to me and she says, right, so what's the story then? And I said, well, what do you mean? She went, well, the attraction you're going to put in here, what's the story? And I go, I don't think we're putting attractions in here. And she's like, yeah, but what's the story? And I was like, oh, okay. It's a science lab where they're trying to find a cure for a zombie virus. And she went, oh, yeah, we've done that before, though, haven't we? I went, yeah, but it's a zombie virus that they've created to try and make people better. And it's something to do with Nemesis. Like, I was just trying to kind of get out of an awkward situation. She went, and she said, yeah, sounds good, we'll do that then. And then lo and behold, wheels were in motion for Project 42.
Oh
Yeah.
wow, it was literally like that. So you could have said anything in that moment and it would have gone a totally different direction.
I mean, I think we were all kind of going, yeah, that's actually a really good use of the space. If I'd walked into Nemesis of Terror, because I guess we couldn't like strip out all of what was in there, so we had to kind of use what was in there as the base layer. So if I'd walked in there and said, oh, it's going to be a gothic haunted house, I think they would have, give me a P45 then or something.
It had to be linked into the Nemesis story somehow. My overwhelming memory of, because honestly, like, I did go through it with my eyes closed 90% of the time. But there was a bit where you had like plastic bags, like almost like inflatable plastic bags or something, and you're walking through it, and it was very claustrophobic. How do you come up with the idea for something like that to go, right, we want to like squeeze people through a bit, and we're going to use this, and we're going to do it like that?
In a lot of scare attractions, there are old carnival style elements, so things that you would have found in fun houses and things like that, and that's one of them. So in Carnival of Screams, we had one of those. 1 year it was known as the Big Squeeze, and there was a big sign that said the Big Squeeze, but the kind of claustrophobia tunnels is kind of what we call them. And so when it came to doing Project 42, I wanted to navigate out of what's the batching area of Nemesis of Terror into what is the lift area, but to make it feel as though you're not approaching an elevator. So one of the ways I did that was to put those in, and normally they're black, so you can't, once you're inside them, it feels like it's very dark as well. But I said, what if we could get them in white to kind of make it feel clinical, kind of almost like a further decontamination type thing. So for me, one of the things that's really important when it comes to scare attractions is whatever you put in them, even if it is one of these kind of old carnival tricks, it feels relevant and it's justified within whatever story you're trying to tell. Because if it doesn't make sense, then it takes you as the consumer, you as the guest, you as the person living it, it takes you out of that world. So again, going back to my joke about putting a haunted, gothic haunted house inside Nemesis of Terror, it wouldn't make sense. So you wouldn't feel immersed into that story. So in that time, putting something like claustrophobia was a little bit of a calculated risk, because it doesn't on the surface make sense. but there's a way you can make it make sense to keep you within that immersion, but still prey on your kind of instinctive fears,
Yeah.
obviously,
Well, it
claustrophobia.
worked for me. It like I said, it's the one thing that I really remember quite distinctly from it. And maybe why I've never gone in a scare maze again. I wanted to ask about, obviously, that one I went through. I'm very, very scared, but I could grab onto my husband all the way through. The mazes where you get split up, which is just an absolute no-go for me. I mean, the thought of being in one of these on my own trying to find my way out. No, but I appreciate for a lot of people who are into these attractions, that is part of the thrill. Do you think they're more scary inherently? And do you, if you wanted to create a new attraction, do you go, right, okay, this is one where we're going to split people up because we want it to be a little bit next level scary?
I think they're only scary if you are susceptible to being scared in that way. I know that sounds daft to say, but I think it's important to remember that if you're quite a confident person walking through a scare attraction, it doesn't really matter how many people you're with as to whether you'd be scared or not. I think sometimes the threat of being split up is a lot scarier than actually being split up, and that's one of the things that you'll see in attractions like Compound, like Subspecies, the Endgame is when it was here, is as soon as you tell people they will be split up, some people will go, "That's it, I'm not going in," and they will leave, which happened a lot in Subspecies. I think, again, it has to fit in with the story as to whether that's an element that we put into those things. Sometimes that might be the reason or where you start off from. So when Compound came around, what my brief was from the director of entertainment was he wanted a blunt instrument, was how he described it, something that is a gut punch, something that kind of hits you over the head as soon as you, metaphorically hits you over the head, obviously. Hits you as soon as you walk into the attraction, and being threatened with walking alone or going through these attractions on your own is one of those things. But also in Compound, you won't know because you've not done it, but one of the first things that happens is you get put into a cell and you actually get locked in that cell. So again, someone who's claustrophobic like yourself, it kind of immediately, as soon as you walk into the attraction, starts preying on those base fears, if you like. So yeah, again, it has to fit with the story. It has to fit with what you're trying to tell, because it wouldn't make sense. So for example, if you went into the attic and you had to get split up, why? Why? It's a ghost story. Why would the ghosts be roughing us up and splitting us up? What, that wouldn't happen. So yeah, it has to fit with the story.
And I guess with something like that, where you don't get split up, you then have to just find another way to play on those fears. And you have to say, well, what is the fear that we're trying to create in this one? If it's not claustrophobia, it's not being alone. What is it? And something like the attic, what would you say the overriding feeling of fear is that you were trying to create?
I always start with what the scary thing is, and by that it could be one of those fears that you've just been talking about. With the attic, it was I wanted to tell a ghost story, and the reason ghost stories work is because they build the tension. So when it came to the attic, the space came first. It was what can we do in the ruins that uses a different space, and I knew that top floor because we've used it for many other things. It was part of the Ultimate Sleepover, for example. So I was like, we don't really take guests up there, so how can we do that? And those who've done the attic will remember the what felt like 95,000 stairs that you had to go up to get to the main part of the attraction, and all that way, that's building that tension. So as well as changing your location, so taking you somewhere that you're unfamiliar with, it builds the tension. And I think Simon, who wrote the music for it, really encapsulated that in the soundtrack as well. There's lots of kind of piano lines and melody at the start, and then it gets harsher as it goes through. And if you can build tension the release of the tension becomes the scary thing. So you were saying you don't like jump scares. You don't like that release of the tension. Or it's probably actually the build of tension that you don't like. It's
Maybe,
the
yeah.
apprehension. It's the something's gonna happen. So that's what I wanted to do with the attic. It's a classic ghost story.
And let's not forget, there's a lot of people who might not be bothered about chainsaws or claustrophobia or being chased by whatever, but tell them that it's something's actually haunted or there's a ghost story, and that will just send them off the edge. And that can be their sort of fear as much as anything else. Have you got a favourite baby? I know it's like trying to say choose your favourite child, but of all the ones you've worked on, is there one that you would be like, that one's got a special place for me?
I think you've answered the question there. No, I don't have a favorite. I'm very fond of a lot of them, and some of them I wish they were longer. So a lot of the attractions that I've created due to circumstantial reasons only lasted a couple of years. So Project 42 we mentioned, Freak Show Toxic Junkyard that only lasted a couple of years. The Welcoming only lasted a couple of years. These are, I wish we got more out of them because I really enjoyed them, and I enjoyed the different aspects of different kind of emotions and different vibes that they kind of evoked. And because that we've just touched on it, people are scared of different things, and I think as variation, that those are three kind of very different attractions to everything else that was around them at the time. So, I wish they were longer. I love House of Monsters as well. I think that again was a victim of circumstance, but that could have run for many, many a year if the time was right. It was a very, especially by that third year, it was a very beloved attraction as well. Not necessarily a scare attraction, but we're talking Halloween, aren't we? So it's fine.
So it's important, do you think, to have a balanced mix of mazes with one which is like the themes are different. They none of them sort of overlap.
I think the themes have to be different, but also the style of attraction is different. So how you tell the story has to be different as well as the story you're telling. A good example of that is when the Attic came about, the other attractions that were around were Orville Mine Tours and Subspecies The End Games, which Orville Mine Tours is very claustrophobic, very gruesome in its kind of nature. And then Subspecies was that kind of that gut punch that I was talking about before. So to have the attic as that third alongside it, which gives it that kind of that tension building was key. And as I said, it was a ghost story. It was in a different ecosphere. It wasn't post-apocalyptic like Subspecies and Project 42. It was it's gothic horror. It evokes a different emotion. But yeah, I think the way you tell the story has to be different. That's why there's been, especially at Alton Towers, so many different style of attractions over the past 10 years when I've been working on them. Whatever you thought about them, we had The Invitation, which was something completely different. We had Daz Games Panic Reloaded, which was a different style of attraction, something completely different to what Altonville Mine Tours was offering. And then when Compound came around, that's a different style of attraction again. And kind of you can even see it now with things like Edge of the Forest. It's kind of gone back to that kind of linear, traditional kind of walk through scare base to kind of give that different point of view.
Yeah, and I want to talk about that in a moment, but I'm just interested to know who decides when these mazes move on. So you've mentioned like you would have liked some of them to last longer and more seasons. As theme park fans, you know us, we always have a whinge about everything. But often we'll be the ones saying, oh, it's like we want a fresh one. We want something new. We don't want the same mazes back. But for you, it sounds like you'd like them to last a little bit longer, I guess, because you see there's more scope in them to do more with the base of those stories.
I think there's a sweet spot. There's a sweet spot to find. What that sweet spot is will be different on the attraction. I think something like the Welcoming went too soon because it had more to offer. I personally enjoyed Freak Show Toxic Junkyard, but perhaps bringing that back for a third year would not have worked because, again, it's a sweet spot. I think with all anything scary, it has diminishing returns. And by that, I mean, you're only scared of the same thing so many times. So if you are a return visitor, I understand why something you'd want it to be refreshed all the time because you're no longer scared. It's no longer doing the thing that you want it to do. Does that mean it's not scary? No, because 9 out of 10 guests, it's their first time. They will enjoy it. At the end of the day, you have to remember these places are commercial businesses. So 9 out of 10 guests are still enjoying it. I think that's when, again, this is where variation comes into play and having something new. Every year, it doesn't necessarily mean every attraction has to change every year, but having something new will help that and support that. And it might breathe new life into other things. So, like for example, I've heard this year, people are vibing with Compound a bit more than they did last year in return visitors. Again, I think that's got replayability, Compound. I think there's you could do that a few times and still find it as scary. But I think with the introduction of the two new attractions that they have at Alton Towers this year, it's given a point of difference to Compound. Like I was saying before, that variation is key because scary things do have, as I say, diminishing returns. So if you're, and this is why variation is so important, because if you're scaring the same way in every attraction, you become hardened to it. So if you do three scare attractions in a row and the jump scares are all the same kind of jump scare, by that third attraction, you know what's coming. You've lost that unknown aspect. I think there's also a nostalgia piece. I think there's a weird time shift where things outstay their welcome, but then all of a sudden become really favourable again. So Terror of the Towers is a great one. That final year of Terror of the Towers, for years people have been clamouring to say, look, we want something new, we don't want this Terror of the Towers. But then as soon as we announced it was its final year, there was a lot of kind of love for it in the respect that people wanted it to stay and live on for longer.
It's weird how we act like that. I think the same thing's going to happen with mind tours because, I mean, there's a big part of that. Like I said, I don't go in them, but every year when I go to Scarefest, because I do go every year, I can't believe that it's still going. My husband goes in it every year. He said over the last couple of years, not a load of stuff has changed. Obviously, they brought in the Chinese Revenge sort of thing and changed it up a little bit, but it's still, I guess it's still got its roots in what you originally created in 2016. Are you amazed that it's still going?
In all honesty, no. I'm not, because it works as a scare attraction. It has a lot of elements in it that just seem to fit perfectly together to kind of make that perfect scare potion. It tells the story in the right way. The twists and the turns that happen through the route are so effective that there's a reason it's still there. I understand that people might not like to go through it every year and see the same thing, but one of my close friends, it's one of the things that she's scared of the most. So she used to come to Scarefest all the time to support and to support me, and it's always the one that she had the most to say about because she didn't like it, but she didn't like it because it was scary. So I think it's personal preference. It's one of those things. It'd be interesting to see what happens if Mind Tours does come to an end. As you say, we kind of refreshed it a couple of years ago with Tiny's Revenge, changed the story. It moved on a decade, if you like, because in my head, Oldville Mind Tours were set in the 70s and Tiny's Revenge is set in the 80s. So it evolved with times. So who knows? I don't know. I don't know what will happen to it in the future, but I like it. That's not the reason it stayed for so long.
This is my best work. It's not going anywhere. It can't hang around forever, surely. But I guess part of it is you want to replace it with something that's better than what you've got. And that idea's got to be right. And I guess from what you've been saying, you'd want to replace it with something with a similar sort of scare and a similar sort of feeling about it. But how do you make that feeling better than what you've already got? If it's not tied into a new ride opening or something like that. I don't know. It's an interesting thought. Every year when it comes back, I'm amazed to still see it on the lineup. But I do think it's one of those that that year when it's like, oh, hang on, they've got rid of Hauntville Mine Tours, everyone's going to go crazy. But I'd like to think that they would sort of announce it like Terror of the Towers and go, right, this is Hauntville Mine Tours last year, and do some sort of big thing for it, and then everyone can say goodbye and look forward to what's coming next. So part of me would say it's going to be here in 2026, but I don't know, you probably know that better than me.
In this instance, I don't. I'm curious to see what happens to it next as well.
Okay, let's talk about the new ones for this year. Now, you left Alton Towers as the creative manager at the start of this year. You were sort of caught up in all this massive entertainment restructure, and let's be PC about it, which we've talked about on the podcast, and obviously we weren't massive fans of. We were big fans of you guys all being there and part of Alton Towers. The new scare zone and scare maze for Alton Towers for this year, you were sort of behind, and you were working on them.
So they were two concepts that we were working on last year, not necessarily to open last year, but when I worked at Alton Towers, we tend to work on events almost a year or more in advance. So they were concepts that we started working on prior to me leaving, because when I worked at Alton Towers, we tended to work on events 12 months or more in advance. So both Edge of the Forest and Dark Hollow initially came from my brain. With Edge of the Forest, it all started off as this crazy poem I wrote after reading a book about an old haunted forest.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I wanted it to be the poem this is. I wanted it to be like a kind of Beowulf kind of old poem that kind of has a little bit of folklore behind it, so that if it was to be used in the attraction or part of the attraction, it was almost felt like we'd found an old poem and we based it on an old poem, which you can still hear that poem as you're waiting to enter the first cottage of Edge of the Forest. You can still hear it playing in the audio,
which is
really nice. And that's where the name Leshwall came from as well. I wanted to kind of take this creature of Leshy, who's this kind of Norse folk creature, and make him a Middle England kind of character, which is why I added the wall on the end of it. So yeah, that's where that started off. Since leaving, other creatives have taken over, so it's changed, it's adapted. It's not the same complete concepts that I had. It has lots of different twists and turns that I didn't anticipate being as part of that. And the same with Dark Hollow, that started off as a concept that I created with the name, and it being loosely linked to 13 and the 13 girl, but it's developed since then. So I got to see both of them on the opening day of Scarefest. I think Edge of the Forest is a very beautiful attraction, very different to what I anticipated it to be. But
did you expect it to be scarier?
I expected a slightly different story, because there was an aspect of the story that I wrote that wasn't there, and there's different aspects that had been put into it. But that's what happens when different people take over attractions. I'm sure the creative who was there before me, if he came to Scarefest and saw Hauntville Mine Tours, he would have gone, this is very different to what I imagined. And that's just what happens. People interpret things differently as they're making it. So, you could go and see two or three different versions of Hamlet. It's the same script, but it's all different.
Yeah. No, I think that is a very pragmatic answer you've given, and a fair answer, and it makes perfect sense. You know what? No one else is in your brain; only you are in your brain, and whoever's taken it on is obviously taken a lot of your concepts, but then made it their own. There was a lot of talk when it was first announced that Edge of the Forest itself was sort of rooted in 13 lore. Would you say that's not the case? It was just happened to be based in a similar sort of area.
So the brief for those attractions when we started working on them was to be rooted in the dark forest. We keep saying the word root. It's a difficult one, isn't it? It was to be rooted in the dark forest, but with Edge of the Forest, because it's kind of, well, it's literally on the edge of the forest. The name tells you that it's not part of the same thing, even though it kind of is. In my world, it's the, you know, it's kind of how Annabelle is connected to The Conjuring. It's all in the same universe. Not always the same stories. So, even though Annabelle features in The Conjuring in her own films, it's not connected with any of the other main characters from that film series. So, that's kind of how, in my head, it's. I mean, at the end of the day, the Dark Forest is a haunted forest. It's got its own story. But what the roots of those, again, I've done it again. What the roots of those stories are, could be open to interpretation, and that's kind of what we. What I wanted to achieve with Edge of the Forest. With Dark Hollow, that was something that definitely needed to be, in my head, linked to 13, which is, again, is what the presence of that character from 13 lore is there.
What's with the bears?
If you go down to the woods today, you better not go alone. It's at your best picnic.
See, I hadn't even made that connection, but now you've said it, it absolutely makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Was that part of your original idea as well? Were the bears in there?
Yeah, again, it's changed. It's not the same concept, but the bears were characters. So they were slightly different in my head, but I think they work now as well how they are. So yeah, they were there originally, but they've changed slightly.
It's been really, really good chatting to you, Kieran. What now, obviously you've left Alton Towers. What are you doing now? How are you getting those creative juices flowing?
So I'm still working freelance. So if people ever require my services to do any kind of direction, not just in scare stuff, but outside of that, so other forms of entertainment as well, then that's what I'm doing right now. I said I was a writer, so I'm filling the time in between with a few little kind of personal projects as well, writing those. So yeah, still keeping myself busy and still somewhat involved in some things. So yeah.
Have you gone to any other scare attractions? Obviously, we did an episode a couple of weeks ago talking about how there's so many of them now popping up, standalone ones.
I haven't gone this year as of yet. I've got some in the calendar to go to. I always like to go to other attractions, especially when you're working on them, because you get to see what's out there. You get to notice trends. You know, the same with films as they're releasing. You get to notice what the trends might be. It feels like it's quite interesting because, as I say about Edge of the Forest, we came up with that a while ago. It's nearly 2 years since we developed that initial concept, but it does feel like there's a lot of plant-based things out there this year. So that's interesting how that's kind of naturally grown as a trend.
Was grown a pun there? Deliberate.
Unintentional, unintentional.
Yeah, okay. Well, I can see that. It might be a bit of a busman's holiday for when you go and do these things as well. Now, at this point in the podcast, I'd usually ask you what your Just Gotta Ride It is, which is the roller coaster that you would save over any other in the world if everything else was going to get destroyed. But I believe you're not a massive coaster rider.
I like some coasters. I don't. Yeah, I'm not a fan of bigger, faster, stronger. Yeah, I'll take the Runaway Mine Train any day.
Okay, well, if I was asking you that question, what would you say?
Oh God, I'm gonna have a really selfish answer, which is Nemesis. I think that's been so important to my career in theme parks. We've talked about Nemesis of Terror, we've talked about Compound, we've talked about Subspecies, The Endgames, talked about Project 42. These are all connected. So we've worked on the street team as well for the Forbidden Valley street team for the launch of Nemesis Reborn. A lot of my colleagues had a lot of hands in the lore that was kind of built around that, and the kind of the PR and the marketing campaigns that went in as well. So I think that one for me is quite important, but I think it's also quite important to the industry. I'm not a theme park enthusiast, but who knows where we would be without Nemesis.
No, I fully agree. It was a huge game changer, not just, well, for the industry, but for Alton Towers. You know, it's so much of Alton Towers is now linked to Nemesis, and when you think Alton Towers, you think Nemesis. So, yeah, it's a good choice, especially for someone who's not a roller coaster enthusiast. We'll stick that one in there
And
for
I
you.
will ride that one as well. I'll
Will
definitely,
you? It's quite intense. If for someone who doesn't like intense coasters, you'd be better off with 13.
I like 13 as well.
All the John Wardley classics. All right, Kieran. Well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your insight with us on Parkcast. It's been fascinating hearing from you. We are all still very sad about the situation of the entertainment staff at Merlin. Part of me hopes we're going to see a return to what it was like when you were there, and you know, full-time staff, and they can really get that back on track. I think it's vitally important that we have entertainment at theme parks. I think they're amusement parks without entertainment. And I hope that we can get back somewhere like that in the future. But obviously, it's out of all of our hands. I hope you're keeping busy, and I hope you enjoy your visits to your scare attractions. And it's been
Thank
great
you.
speaking to you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
If you have enjoyed today's episode and you haven't already, do hit subscribe. That way you never miss a future episode. And if you'd like to leave us a review, you can do that as well. For now, though, we've been Parkcast.
Parkcast. The UK's original theme park podcast.